Chapter 29. The Bad Dog Club. When I arrived at work the next morning, the red message light on my telephone was blinking. I punched in my access code and received a recorded warning I had never heard before. "Your mailbox is full," the voice said. "Please delete all unneeded messages." I logged onto my computer and opened my email. Same story. The opening screen was filled with new messages, and so was the next screen, and the one after that too. The morning email was a ritual for me, a visceral, if inexact, barometer of the impact that day's column had made. Some columns brought as few as 5 or 10 responses, and on those days I knew I had not connected. Others brought several dozen, a good day. A few brought even more. But this morning there were hundreds, far more than anything I had received before. The headers at the top of the email said things like, "Deepest condolences," "About your loss," or simply, "Marley." Animal lovers are a special breed of human, generous of spirit, full of empathy, perhaps a little prone to sentimentality, and with hearts as big as a cloudless sky. Most who wrote and called simply wanted to express their sympathies, to tell me they too had been down this road and knew what my family was going through. Others had dogs whose lives were drawing to their inevitable ends. They dreaded what they knew was coming, just as we had dreaded it, too. One couple wrote, "We fully understand, and we mourn for your loss of Marley, and for our loss of Rusty. They'll always be missed, never truly replaced." From Connie. It's just the most amazing thing to love a dog, isn't it? It makes our relationships with people seem as boring as a bowl of oatmeal. When the messages finally stopped coming several days later, I counted them up. Nearly 800 people, animal lovers all, had been moved to contact me. It was an incredible outpouring, and what a catharsis it was for me. By the time I had plowed through them all and answered as many as I could, I felt better, as though I was part of a giant cyber support group. My private morning had become a public therapy session, and in this crowd there was no shame in admitting a real, piercing grief for something as seemingly inconsequential as an old, smelly dog. My correspondents wrote and called for another reason, too. They wanted to dispute the central premise of my report, the part in which I insisted Marley was the world's worst-behaved animal. "Excuse me," the typical response went, "but yours couldn't have been the world's worst dog, because mine was." To make their case, they regaled me with detailed accounts of their pet's woeful behavior. I heard about shredded curtains, stolen lingerie, devoured birthday cakes, trashed auto interiors, great escapes, even a swallowed diamond engagement ring, which made Marley's taste for gold chains seem positively lowbrow by comparison. My inbox resembled a television talk show, "Bad Dogs and the People Who Love Them," with the willing victims lining up to proudly brag not about how wonderful their dogs were, but about just how awful. Oddly enough, most of the horror stories involved large, loopy retrievers, just like mine. We weren't alone after all. Larry the Lab swallowed his mistress's bra and then burped it up in one piece 10 days later. Gypsy, another lab with adventurous taste, devoured a jealousy window. Jason, a retriever Irish setter mix, downed a 5-foot vacuum cleaner hose, interior reinforcing wire and all, his owner Mike reported, adding, "But I loved that beast." Phoebe, a lab mix, was kicked out of 2 different boarding kennels and told never to return, owner Amy wrote. It seems she was the gang leader in breaking out of not only her cage, but doing the favor for 2 other dogs, too. They then helped themselves to all kinds of snacks during the overnight hours. Tim reported his yellow lab, Ralph, was every bit as much a food thief as Marley, only smarter. One day before going out, Tim placed a large chocolate centerpiece on top of the refrigerator where it would be safely out of Ralph's reach. The dog, his owner reported, pawed open the cupboard drawers, then used them as stairs to climb onto the counter, where he could balance on his hind legs and reach the chocolate, which was gone without a trace when his master returned home. Despite the chocolate overdose, Ralph showed no ill effects. Another time, Tim wrote, Ralph opened the refrigerator and emptied its contents, including things in jars. Nancy clipped my column to save because Marley reminded her so much of her retriever, Gracie. I left the article on the kitchen table and turned to put away the scissors, Nancy wrote. When I turned back, sure enough, Gracie had eaten the column. Wow, I was feeling better by the minute. Marley no longer sounded all that terrible. If nothing else, he certainly had plenty of company in the Bad Dog Club. I brought several of the messages home to share with Jenny, who laughed for the first time since Marley's death. My new friends in the secret brotherhood of dysfunctional dog owners had helped us more than they ever would know. The days turned into weeks, and winter melted into spring. Daffodils pushed up through the earth and bloomed around Marley's grave. Gradually, life without our dog became more comfortable. Days would float by without me even thinking of him, and then some little cue, one of his hairs on my sweater, the rattle of his choker chain as I reached into my drawer for a pair of socks, would bring him abruptly back. As time passed, the recollections were more pleasant than painful. Long-forgotten moments flashed in my head with vivid clarity, like clips being rerun from old home videos. The way Lisa, the stabbing victim, had leaned over and kissed Marley on the snout after she got out of the hospital. The way he held mangoes in his front paws as he nibbled out the flesh. The way he snapped at the baby's diapers with that look of narcotic bliss on his face. Little moments hardly worth remembering, and yet, here they were, randomly playing out on my mental movie screen at the least likely times and places. Most of them made me smile. A few made me bite my lip and pause. He was a central player in some of the happiest chapters of our lives. Chapters of young love and new beginnings, of budding careers and tiny babies, of heady successes and crushing disappointments, of discovery and freedom and self-realization. He came into our lives just as we were trying to figure out what they would become. He joined us as we grappled with what every couple must eventually confront, the sometimes painful process of forging from two distinct pasts one shared future. He became part of our melded fabric, a tightly woven and inseparable strand in the weave that was us. Just as we had helped shape him into the family pet he would become, he helped to shape us as well, as a couple, as parents, as animal lovers, as adults. Despite everything, all the disappointments and unmet expectations, Marley had given us a gift at once priceless and free. He taught us the art of unqualified love, how to give it, how to accept it. Where there is that, most of the other pieces fall into place. No doubt about it, life without a dog was easier and immensely simpler. We could take a weekend jaunt without arranging boarding. We could go out to dinner without worrying what family heirloom was in jeopardy. The kids could eat without having to guard their plates. The trash can didn't have to go up on the kitchen counter when we left. Once again, we could sit back and enjoy in peace the wondrous show of a good lightning storm. I especially liked the freedom of moving around the house without a giant yellow magnet glued to my heels. Still, as a family, we were not quite whole. One morning in late summer, I came down for breakfast and Jenny handed me a section of the newspaper folded over to expose an inside page. "You're not going to believe this," she said. Once a week, our local paper featured a dog from a rescue shelter that needed a home. The profile always featured a photograph of the dog, its name, and a brief description, written as if the dog were speaking in the first person, making its own best case. It was a gimmick the shelter people used to make the animals seem charming and adorable. We always found the doggy resumes amusing, if for no other reason than the effort made to put the best shine on unwanted animals that had already struck out at least once. On this day, staring up from the page at me was a face I instantly recognized. Our Marley. Or at least the dog that could have been his identical twin. He was a big male yellow lab with an anvil head, furrowed brow, and floppy ears cocked back at a comical angle. He stared directly into the camera lens with a quivering intensity that made you just know that seconds after the picture was snapped, he had knocked the photographer to the ground and tried to swallow the camera. Beneath the photo was the name Lucky. I read his sales pitch aloud. "Full of zip. I would do well in a home that is quiet while I am learning how to control my energy level. I have not had an easy life, so my new family will need to be patient with me and continue to teach me my doggy manners." "My God," I exclaimed. "It's him. He's back from the dead." "Reincarnation," Jenny said. "Full of zip? Problem controlling energy? Working on doggy manners? Patience required?" We were well familiar with those euphemisms, having used them ourselves. Our mentally unbalanced dog was back, young and strong again, and wilder than ever. We both stood there staring at the newspaper, not saying anything. "I guess we could go look at him," I finally said. "Just for the fun of it," Jenny added. "Right, just out of curiosity." "What's the harm of looking?" "No harm at all," I agreed. "Well then," she said, "why not? What do we have to lose?"
Hello, this is Cherry Jones, Tony Award-winning actress and narrator of the Little House on the Prairie audiobooks. As an audiobook listener, you know the pleasure of being captivated by a well-told story. You may not know that children who listen to audiobooks enjoy academic benefits as well. Hearing stories read aloud helps children reinforce important fundamental elements of reading readiness and reading comprehension, two key elements of overall success in school. When children listen to recorded stories, they hear and learn new vocabulary, and they practice active listening skills. Children can also listen up. Advanced readers can find challenging and complex stories. Delayed readers can listen and enjoy the story as a whole before breaking it down into smaller pieces. For all children, hearing a good book encourages a lifelong love of literature and reading. So, when you consider what to listen to next, why not also think about the pint-sized listeners in your life and select from one of the many available children's audiobooks?